So it's very important to strategically plan the optimal approach that will translate into business success.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today I'm going to be talking about AI-fueled innovation in health tech and pharmaceuticals. Now, we've got a changing environment. If we think about our customers today, they are sophisticated, educated. They can find information because they have access to a network as well as data from online. And they expect immediate personalized responses. If we think about our competition, most of us are competing with big tech companies, even if we're not a big tech company, because big tech are now in so many different areas. I'm in pharmaceuticals and Google are creating drugs. They've got an R&D facility in San Francisco. Amazon are creating cancer vaccines. Apple are delving into lots of different areas in health. So most industries, those companies are competing with you at some point. And then, of course, we've got disruptive approaches. So it could be new companies that have come onto the scene leveraging AI, or it could even be old world companies that have completely shifted how they're doing things using artificial intelligence. Now, some of you know artificial intelligence thoroughly. Others know ChatGPT. So these days, everyone has heard of ChatGPT, which is a large language model, which is a type of artificial intelligence. But there are so many different types of artificial intelligence. And even, you know, if you think about Airbnb and the way they do their pricing, that's using a machine learning algorithm that, even if you think about Airbnb, the way they do their pricing, that's using a machine learning algorithm that will basically trawl the internet for vacant properties in similar locations to where yours is. And it will work out what is the optimal price that will give us the most uptake and the most profit. So you don't have to take the pricing algorithm. You could go higher and you'd have less people and make more profit per person. Or you could go lower and you will have a lot more people, but less profit per person. But the algorithm is looking at the exact point that you're going to get the sweet spot, that you will make the most money and so will they. And then another example is Amy, who is my digital personal assistant. So she's got one job and that's basically scheduling meetings. So if I CC her in and say to the person, we'll set up a meeting, Amy, could you schedule this? She will then look at my calendar, find where there's blank spots, and she'll contact that person and email them and set up the meeting. And then I don't have to do anything. I don't even see the emails she sends out. And then it just appears in my calendar. So there's lots of different examples. These ones are all using artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, just very briefly, if there's anyone who doesn't know, is the intersection between mathematics and computing. And there's lots of different types of artificial intelligence, from language, natural language processing models like the one I mentioned, right down to machine learning, which has lots of subtypes like decision trees, artificial neural networks, and support vector machines. And even underneath those, there's other types like under decision trees, we have random forest, artificial neural networks, we've got deep learning. So there's lots and lots of different types of artificial intelligence. And basically, there's different levels of artificial intelligence. So artificial narrow intelligence is pretty much most artificial intelligence that is out there today. But then we've got two other categories, general intelligence and superintelligence. And so they are taking it a few steps further. Artificial intelligence is used for so many things in healthcare and in pharmaceuticals. So if we think about our customer, you know, the customer of today, the person of today, has a smartphone, which is AI enabled. They have often got a smart watch, like an Apple Watch, a smart ring, like the Oura Ring. We also have sensors in socks, in shoes, in clothing, in jewelry. And taking it to the extreme, we actually have got people who have neural chips embedded in their brain. And there's one man that I have come across who has had a neural chip in his brain for quite a few years, way longer than anyone would expect anyone to have it. And it helps him dramatically with his day-to-day functioning. So it's interesting how we as humans are now becoming AI augmented. So we can collect data from sensors, from all of these different aspects that we have around today. On top of that, we've also got literature data. We've got bio data, you know, our blood data, our DNA data. We've got scan data like CAT scan, MRI, retinal images, lung scans. We've got the wearables data, and we've got electronic medical records data. So there's so many ways this data can actually be used, and there's a lot more data. That's just the healthcare. We can integrate healthcare data with other data to find out a lot more. So I thought maybe I'll just start with COVID, because COVID was a great example of AI being used in so many different ways. The very first time, the first notification of the outbreak, of any outbreak, but for the COVID one, came from an AI system called Blue Dot. And they actually warned about it days before the CDC and World Health Organization knew anything about it. And their intelligence was gained from over 40 pathogen-specific data sets that reflected disease mobility and outbreak potential. And so they really quantified risk and analyzed the big data from billions of flight itineraries, real-time climate change, health system capability, and even animal and insect populations. And they were able to give real-time insights about exposure to different conditions, including COVID, so they could do risk assessments. And then AI was also used to diagnose COVID. So out of all the cases that were found in the early days, many of them were asymptomatic. You know, tens of thousands were asymptomatic. And although the most common symptoms were fever and dry cough, and there were other ones like shortness of breath, etc., but some people had no symptoms. And so quite a few of the AI companies actually developed systems to diagnose the severity of COVID, and even if they had COVID, from x-rays, scans of the lungs. And Radlogix was one company that actually achieved 98% accuracy in their diagnosis from the system. But it was also Damo, which is a subsidiary of the Alibaba Group, and they can diagnose suspected COVID cases with 96% accuracy in 20 seconds. And they actually really help the Chinese hospitals cope with everything. On top of that, there was SenseTime and HealthCode, and they've got this surveillance system in China, and they use face recognition technology, and they added temperature detection software from SenseTime. So in a crowded space, they could detect who is likely to have the virus from their temperature from that system. And the police actually had this in their helmets, so they could detect people in a crowd whose temperature was above average and were likely to have COVID. Then in my sector, in treating conditions, there were quite a few companies that did some very interesting things. DearGen and Benevolent AI decided to use AI to look at FDA-approved drugs for other conditions to see which ones might be valuable in treating COVID. And DearGen from South Korea and Benevolent AI looked at existing FDA-approved drugs to see which may be useful in treating COVID. So DearGen identified that atenosanavir, which is an HIV drug, would be useful, and Benevolent AI came up with baricitinib. So neither of those obviously were for COVID because it was a new condition, but both of those tested in clinical trials to be very effective against COVID. And in fact, when they were used in combination, they were even more effective. Then on top of that, Insilico and SRI Biosciences actually were able to both design molecules from scratch so that these could actually be then created with synthetic chemistry in weeks rather than months to years, as is usually the case. We also used combination of AI and blockchain for supply chain, because we had a lot of issues during COVID with supply chain, given that a lot of the active pharmaceutical ingredients come out of China. And then processing health claims data and financial, which is yet another of the Alibaba group, actually have a platform for processing health claims data. Matterport, I think the name was, actually had AI-powered drones that delivered medical supplies hands-free. And we even had robots to sterilize equipment. The Chinese government also implemented a monitoring system, the health code I mentioned earlier, that actually was then detecting non-compliance. And of course, World Health put with Tencent did a WhatsApp chatbot that could actually share health information. And then of course we had supercomputers on prevention. So there were so many different ways that AI was used during COVID, which were quite completely different ways, but it's used for so many more things. It's used for things like streamlining healthcare data for better management and mining insights, designing treatment pathways to facilitate diagnostic and therapeutic decisions, assisting medical professionals to automate creation of notes and paperwork, and actually Amazon are doing work in that space, aiding patients to manage their conditions, and actually making precision medicine a reality, as well as using it throughout the pharmaceutical life cycle. So I work in pharmaceuticals, and the sorts of areas that we work in are in discovery, and I gave you some examples of how AI is used in discovery, R&D, and again, drug repurposing, for example, manufacturing, clinical trials, market access, supply chain, regulatory, medical, sales, and marketing. So we use it all the way through the value chain in pharmaceuticals now. And I can just give you some brief case studies of how we use it, and then I'm going to talk about where we're going in the future. So a project that we did many, many years ago, over a decade ago, was really to use AI to find rare disease patients. So we had a client who had an ultra-rare disease. So there are only about 126 patients in the world with this condition. And what that meant was it was very difficult to find a patient. Can you imagine? In all 7 billion people on the planet, and 126 was like a needle in a haystack. And so these were children that were born with this condition, and it was genetic. And so it was a horrific condition, and they would actually start losing IQ points very quickly if they were not treated, and they would be dead by the age of 10 if they were not treated. If they were caught in time and treated, they could actually live a normal, healthy life. So what we noticed when we were looking at these patients was that their faces had a lot of similarities. So we realized we could actually do a face recognition software and use it to identify from photos that were posted online anyone with that condition in the photo. So this was babies and children. So it was a very long time ago, as I said, well over a decade ago. And so in those days, there was a photo sharing app called Flickr and, of course, Facebook. So we were able to let this bot loose in those places, and it could identify if a picture of a child or a baby had the condition. Now, we had to be very careful because I had had a few experiences, and I really did not want the parents of these children to have the same experience I had. One of which was I was on a flight to Hong Kong from England, and I stretched on the plane, and my hand went back, and I felt my shoulder, and I felt this mole that I'd never seen before. And so I thought, I must check that when I get to the hotel. So I got to the hotel in Hong Kong, looked in the mirror, and I thought, haven't seen that. Went to Google, typed in melanoma, and just really wanted to compare my mole with the melanoma moles. And within 10 minutes, I got a text on my phone inviting me to a talk on melanoma near my house in England. And so that felt very invasive. It was stupid strategy because it hadn't even been confirmed what the mole was. But it also meant that someone, i.e. Google, because that's the only thing I had used, had collated my search with my contact details without my explicit permission and contacted me about something that I wasn't interested in because I didn't know for sure. So I didn't want any parents to have this experience. We found a group on Facebook of diagnosed parents. There weren't that many, but they were there. So we talked to them, and they said that the first time they noticed something was wrong with their child was when they were trying to potty train them. And they had, there was another condition, another symptom, which was constantly runny noses. So those were the two things that the parents eventually noticed and started to worry about. So we basically did what we used to do in those days with retargeting cookies. So you know how you'd search for something and then suddenly you get ads for that everywhere? That's using it badly. But that same technology. So if we found someone who had a child that, you know, if someone had put up a photo of a child that had the condition, we would basically drop a retargeting cookie. And when they went to Google, they would get an ad with a picture of someone who looked just like their child. If they were searching for something to do with the child, so if they were searching for potty training, if they were searching for runny noses, if they were searching for something else, they wouldn't get the ad. And if they weren't someone who had the child with that condition, they wouldn't get the ad. And so from that, we actually got a lot of people who had children, well, 13 patients straight away we found within the first few weeks. And that was because the parents recognized that it was their child, went to the disease website, and then printed out some pages and brought it into their doctor, and then got the genetic testing and discovered they had it. So that was 13 lives saved from doing that. And more over time. But that's kind of the way we use AI. It's really finding solutions to challenges to help people, but in ways that you couldn't really do without AI. So there's lots of different ways. We've done that for rare cancer patients. We've done it for earlier diagnosis where patients aren't diagnosed till 10 years in because the symptoms aren't recognized because they're too woolly, and we can really speed up diagnosis so that patients can get treated a lot sooner before the disease actually has permanent damage so they can't be treated. So there's lots of really great ways that you can use this. However, leveraging AI is not really a nice to have anymore. You know, it's really core to business success. But I really want to reiterate to everyone that you don't just go in and do it. You really need to align it with the strategic objectives of your company. I see so many companies, and it does drive me crazy, that are doing pilot after pilot of all these random ad hoc AI things. And while they may be interesting projects, they, if they're not aligned to the company goals and what the company's trying to achieve, it's often a very expensive waste of money. So it's very important to strategically plan the optimal approach that will translate into business success. So we always now... we didn't, you know, 20 years ago when we were doing AI projects, we just launched straight in. But we learned that you have to do this because you really want something that's going to move the dial on the company. And so we always start with a strategic AI blueprint where we're looking at where the best value to both the customer or the patient or the doctor or the payer, whoever it is, and the company lies. And then you can prioritize what's going to be the highest value for everyone, what's going to be win-win, and you can do that in a blueprint. And once you've come up with the different ideas, you really look at it for strategic fit, for impact, likelihood of success, urgency, and of course, cost-benefit. But the world is really changing, and my industry, pharma, are facing lots of challenges. If you think back to some of the things I talked about earlier, you know, medicines were really the breakthrough. Pharmaceuticals and many industries are facing challenges and need to look at how to change how they're doing things. If you think about earlier diagnostics, you know, Grail, amazing company that actually do a single blood draw and can diagnose over 50 cancers in people with no symptoms. You know, so we're seeing this kind of situation where diagnosis is so early, you won't need drugs, which is fantastic. You know, humans are going to live a lot healthier and a lot longer. A friend of mine is an architect, and she's actually building homes in London, which have AI in the bathroom mirror and AI in the toilets. And so the mirror just detects micro changes in the face and body that are indicative of particular health conditions. And the toilets do urine and feces analyses every day. So we've got these smart diagnostic homes now that are not a dream, they're a reality. And now we've also got digital therapeutics, you know, like video games that can treat conditions without any drug need, and nanobots, these tiny little robots that can go into the bloodstream, smaller than the width of a hair, and actually target cancer clear out your cholesterol, things like that. So there's a lot of changes that are going to mean a lot of changes for industries such as pharmaceuticals. But also, if you think about it from the patient world, you know, all of our health needs to be integrated properly. So we can actually now diagnose very early. No one's really doing it in an integrated way, but from our genetic information, what conditions we're likely to have. And so I see us entering a world where in the next decade or so, we start to be able to routinely be able to do diagnostic analyses on us, which is possible now and being done now, but that then being linked into our full healthcare system. So that means that we can preempt conditions and treat them before they actually ever come about. We can vaccinate against lots of them. You know, we're all working on cancer vaccines. We've been doing projects on cancer vaccines. So there's lots of very interesting things to prevent conditions if you know it's going to come up. Then there was a very interesting company, is a very interesting company, Q Health. In 2012, I had a video that they let me use for a conference, and I still see that as revolutionary. I can't show it here because this is going to be shown on YouTube when you can't show other people's clips. But basically, they had these cubes that you could put, if you had a flu, you could put like a nasal swab, or you could put a saliva swab or a urine swab or a blood swab, whatever your condition, whatever you need, the test is needed. You put it into the cube, it will run the analysis, and then it linked it to your doctor. So your doctor would get the analysis, you'd get it as well, and the doctor would diagnose it. It was linked to telemedicine, so you could have the consultation with your doctor. It was all linked to your diary, so and where you're going to be. So the prescription would be at the pharmacy that was going to be somewhere on your path in your schedule. And then it could be picked up on the way home. And I assume that eventually that will be drones will just drop it automatically. So we're going to be moving into this era of connected healthcare. Whether it's done in little cubes like Q Health do it, or whether it's actually on our phone, I wouldn't be surprised if we will have little attachments to our phone that we can actually run little blood tests and saliva tests, etc. So the whole way that human health is going to be a much more integrated approach in the long term. In terms of my area and leveraging tech in pharma and medicine, you know, precision medicine is, and gene therapy is already here. We're becoming much more precise in the way we treat because we're treating down at the gene level. We have chips, electronic chips embedded in pills right now. We have pill cams, cameras that go into pills to look at things. We have FDA approved 3D printed drugs. The first one was Spiritam in 2015. We've got 3D printed organs. We've got 3D printed hearts. We've got neural sensors. We've got eye movement sensors. I think where things are going is we're going to have a lot more internet of body and digital twins. You know, a digital twin is an electronic version of something. We have it for cars. So in the old days, we used to crash test cars. We do that mathematically with a digital twin now. And we have digital twins of organs currently, hearts and other organs. Eventually, every single one of us will have a digital twin. So there won't be any drug testing on humans. It will be on digital twins. And we also will be able to predict illnesses in our digital twin before we, in our human tissue, have them. So we're really going into a brave new world, and AI and health tech is getting us there. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.